Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, February 17th, 2024. Midland County. Official decision on jail funding plan on February 20th. The Midland County Commissioner's Court will hold a public comment period and vote on the Certificate of Obligation for the new jail project on Tuesday. The proposed jail is an 800-bed, 230,000-square-foot building at County Road 110 and County Road 1140. The county shared that it must gain a supermajority of voters for the Certificate of Obligation to move forward, meaning 4 out of 5 commissioners need to vote in favor of the funding plan. The only commissioner who has voted against the jail in the past was Precinct 2 Jeff Summers, but his votes against the project have been attributed to its proposed location. In November, County Auditor Veronica Morales shared that if the county were to finance the $170 million jail over a 10-year period, estimated interest payments would be $40.585 million. The total debt service would be around $210 million. For a 15-year repayment, interest payments would be $65.4 million, and a 20-year repayment would cost $95.4 million. According to George Williford from annual debt service for a 20-year repayment period would be around $13,347,619, and yearly debt service for a 15-year repayment term would be $15,795,530. Williford said last Commissioner's Court that around either February 26th through 29th or March 4th through 7th, pricing and marketing of the Certificate of Obligation would be created by underwriters, should the county gain a supermajority of votes for the funding plan and it moves forward. On February 6th, county commissioners discussed the possibility of shortening the repayment term for the county to around 7 or 10 years rather than the conversed 15 or 20-year period. Williford told commissioners this would increase the annual debt service, and a longer repayment term allows the county to the ability to keep a steady tax rate in the future rather than having to increase it again. No official funding plan or repayment period has been approved. There will be a public comment period on Tuesday for the public to share their opinions on the optimal funding plan for the project prior to a vote. The county is required to vote on the item within a certain time frame after it published notices of intent to issue a certificate of obligation, which it did on January 2nd and 9th. Midland County Commissioner's Court will take place Tuesday, February 20th at 9 a.m. at the Midland County Courthouse. Verde Diamondback to build natural gas-to-gasoline facility. A year after signing an equity participation right agreement, Verde Clean Fuels and Diamondback Energy subsidiary Cottonmouth Ventures are developing a natural gas-to-gasoline facility in Martin County. Verde had received a $20 million equity investment from Diamondback to develop and spread its proprietary syngas-to-gasoline, STG+, technology, and that technology will soon spread to the Permian Basin. The two companies have announced a joint development agreement to develop, build, and operate the facility. Quote, it will be located at a Diamondback location in Martin County and produce gasoline from Diamondback natural gas, end quote. Ernie Miller, co-founder and chief executive officer of Verde, told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. The expectation for the project is to produce approximately 3,000 barrels per day. A fully refined gasoline utilizing Verde's patented STG+ process. By consuming natural gas in the pipeline-constrained Permian Basin as feedstock, the proposed project could demonstrate the ability to mitigate the flaring of up to 34 million cubic feet of natural gas per day, while also producing a high-value salable product. Diamondback will then market the commodity-grade gasoline, he said. The target market for that gasoline is expected to be Permian Basin refiners who would take it as blend stock or gasoline blenders or fuel distributors, he added. While Verdi has a similar project underway in California, Miller said the Martin County project will be the first to enter operation when it is complete by late 2025 or early 2026. Miller said the project will not only help mitigate flaring, but also provide economic opportunity by alleviating midstream constraints. At the natural gas trading hub at Waha in Reeves County, he noted the economics of providing the gas to convert into gasoline are more attractive than selling it. He predicted the world would continue to demand gasoline. Verdi has estimated replacing conventional gasoline with Verdi's renewable gasoline would be comparable to removing 6 of every 10 cars on the road today. Quote, consumers aren't buying electric vehicles. The demand is not there, end quote, he said. Quote, they want hybrids or gasoline-fueled cars. Gasoline has a long runway. People want gasoline, but they want cleaner gasoline, end quote. Referring to the announcement, Diamondback will acquire Endeavor Energy Resources, he added, quote, we know we have a lot of additional opportunities with Diamondback, especially now. We look for the Martin County facility to be the first of many, end quote. Robotics Workshop to celebrate National Engineers Week. February 24th event is free, but registration required for participation. The Children's Enrichment Program, Snapology, is planning a free robotics workshop to celebrate National Engineers Week. The workshop is slated for Saturday, February 24th at Great House Elementary School from 1 to 4 p.m. While the event is free, registration is required for participation. Co-owner of Snapology, Mathilda Okimi, says that currently the registration for the event sits at around 80 children, but they may consider expanding the program. Okimi, an educator of 12 years with teaching experience in the Midland and Leander school districts, said that the Saturday workshop on February 24th will offer this community outreach program for children ages 5 through 12. Quote, we are encouraging kids to solve problems and bringing them together to build robots, end quote, Okimi told the Reporter Telegram during a phone interview on Thursday. Snapology's curriculum includes a vast array of STEAM-related topics such as robotics, engineering, coding, and even archaeology, just to name a few. Okimi said the main takeaway is to inspire kids to apply for STEAM-related careers. Quote, our kids do better with hands-on activities, end quote, Okimi said. Quote, our goal for this program is for children to have a career. We want native Midlanders to take these engineering jobs centered around the gas and oil industry, end quote. Another feature of the children's program will be an engineer from the company Diamondback Energy speaking to children about a career in engineering. Quote, Erica Gonzalez is an engineer from Diamondback, and she will be joining us for Saturday's workshop, end quote, Okimi said. For future events within the region, Okimi said Snapology will offer more learning opportunities for children during spring break and the summer months. Quote, we will have summer camps at various locations, Faskin Elementary, St. Mark's United Methodist Church on Main Street, Odessa, Stanton, Greenwood, and Andrews, end quote, Okimi wrote in an email message. For more information on this program, Okimi advised to check Snapology's website and Facebook page. Local company provides pediatric speech therapy. Tall City Speech awarded $100,000 by Midland Development Corporation. Tall City Speech, LLC, is committed to making every child's voice heard. The locally owned pediatric speech therapy company, owned by Lauren Zott, provides a holistic approach, speech, swallowing, feeding, breathing, airways, to speech therapy. Zott graduated from Texas Tech Health Sciences Center in 2015 with a master's degree in speech-language pathology. From there, she worked in a variety of clinical settings, whether it was hospitals, schools, or outpatient clinics, working with patients of all ages. She's been a speech therapist for 10 years and has owned Tall City Speech since 2017. She became focused on a specific area of speech therapy called myofunctional therapy due to her own children's sleeping and swallowing issues. Zott took extra courses and trained with mentors to learn about myofunctional therapy. Quote, I'm super passionate about it because I've lived through it, end quote, she said. Quote, I can relate to parents on that level as well. When their child is not eating well or sleeping well, we try to help them get to the root cause of that, end quote. Tall City Speech, located at 5109 West Wadley Avenue, suite number 106, treats tongue thrust oral resting postures and tethered oral tissues as a part of its myofunctional treatment plan. It also lists speech articulation and phonological disorders as treatment areas. In addition, they address expressive, receptive, as well as social and pragmatic language. Tall City Speech also treats developmental delays and learning disorders. They treat patients ages 0 to 18. The speech therapy clinic is locally owned and private company. Zott discussed some of the advantages for residents. Quote, we do not take insurance, so we are private pay on top of that. We're private, therefore we don't have to jump through Medicaid and Medicare hoops, insurance hoops, so we can treat children without them having necessarily a prerequisite. In the schools, you have to meet certain criteria for insurance to pay for services. So, us being a private pay, we can treat anyone that needs the help, end quote, she said. In addition, a locally owned business provides a familial feeling between provider and client, according to Zott. She said they value relationships with families on a personal level, with parents attending treatment sessions so they know how to continue treatment at home. Quote, when we are treating a child, we do get down to those root cause issues so we can collapse therapy time. So they are not in therapy very long compared to, say, your traditional speech therapy, end quote, she said. On Tuesday, Zott and Tall City Speech were awarded $100,000 as part of the Midland Development Corporation's Entrepreneurial Challenge. Tall City Speech was one of five finalists out of around 50 businesses, according to Zott, who won the challenge and earned a share of $500,000 that they can put towards growth. Zott said the experience was eye-opening, and she was grateful for the opportunity. She said the challenge, which spanned 6 months, included bi-monthly meetings at the UTPB Small Business Center to take courses on marketing, business structure, pitch writing, and how to write a business plan. Quote, it really makes you dissect your business so that you know every single in and out, every single number, which was very new to me, so it's really eye-opening, end quote, Zott said. Zott added that the challenge included three cutoff rounds where the competing businesses submit a pitch sheet followed by a cutoff round, a business plan followed by a cutoff round, and then a presentation in front of five judges that determine the five finalists. Zott said the $100,000 share for her business will be highly beneficial. She has already hired one new speech therapist with two more she would like to add, an occupational therapist to bring in more diverse therapy. She wants to hire administration positions as well as build a sensory gym for children with those needs. She plans to use some of the funds to do renovation to her building itself, which she wants to continue to make more kid-friendly and inviting for parents and families. With the funds from the business challenge, Zott can also provide continuing education courses for her therapists. Life Tributes. Paula Bick, 424-1942 to 212-2024. Arlington. Paula Marie Bell Bick, aged 81, peacefully passed away on Monday, February 12, 2024, at Arlington Memorial Hospital, surrounded by her loving family. Born on April 24, 1942, in Lake Charles, Louisiana, Paula was the second child and only daughter of A.J. Bell and Berenice Bunny Moss Bell. Paula was preceded in death by her parents, A.J. and Bunny Bell, brother Fred Bell, and daughter Laura Bick Randolph. She is survived by devoted husband Larry Bick, son John Bick, and wife Paige of Arlington, Texas, and their children, Hallie Bick of Dallas, Texas, Hayden Bick Wilhide, and husband Jacob Wilhide of Dallas, Texas, and Kennedy Bick of Fort Worth, Texas. Son Gregory Bick and wife Kelly Bick of Fort Worth, Texas, and their children John McLean and wife Mary McLean of Arlington, Texas, and their children John, Dallas, and Miller McLean, Warren McLean Bick Evans and husband Donnie Evans of Marble Falls, Texas, and their children Tripp and Jameson Evans, Peyton Bick of Fort Worth, Texas, and Jacob Bick of Midland, Texas, grandson Tyler Randolph and wife Megan Randolph of Fair Oaks Ranch, Texas, and their children Tyler and Tate Randolph, granddaughter Kristen Randolph of Keller, Texas, and her daughter Kaylin Grantham, granddaughter Catherine Randolph Phillips and husband Ben Phillips of Bastrop, Texas, and their children Kian and Jackson Phillips, and a multitude of extended relatives and friends. A visitation will be held on Thursday, February 22nd from 6 to 8 p.m. at Wade Funeral Home in Arlington. A funeral mass is scheduled for Friday, February 23rd at 11 a.m. at Most Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church in Arlington. The burial service is TBD at Our Lady of Guadalupe Cemetery in Helotes, Texas. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations be made to Catholic Charities of Fort Worth. Lanel, Madrid, 1-11-1954 to 2-10-2024. Lionel Madrid, 70, of Blackwell, Texas, entered Heaven's Gates on Saturday, February 10, 2024. He was born in Ojinaga, Mexico, on January 11, 1954, to Francisco Madrid and Natividad Herrera. Lionel was a loving father, grandfather, uncle, brother, and friend. Lionel was preceded in death by his parents, Francisco and Natividad Madrid, maternal grandparents, Lechina and Francisco Herrera, paternal grandparents, Inez and Maria Madrid, his aunt Cruz Madrid, and his nephew Javier Madrid. He is survived by his daughter, Evelyn Reyes, and husband Jim, son Miley Madrid and wife Sarah, daughter Maricela Madrid Aguirre, and husband Miguel, and the mother of his beautiful children, Irma Madrid. He also leaves behind 11 grandchildren: Brianna Alexis, Victoria Rianne, Joshua Thomas, Lourdes Nicole, Dominic Levix, Jacek Austin, Navea Nami, Raina Michelle, Ethan Ryan, Aislinn Grace, and Ian Matthew. One great-granddaughter, Ollie B., and his granddog, Max. Surviving family members include his brother, Frank Madrid, and wife, Sylvia, sister Linda Madrid Yorkman, sister Velma Lara, his nieces and nephews, and numerous other family and friends. He will be missed by his extended family at 3B in Blackwell, Texas, and the field office in Midland, Texas. Visitation will be held from 10 o'clock a.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. on Monday, February 19th, 2024, at Schaefer Funeral Home, 509 South State Street, Bront, Texas, 76933. The rosary will begin at 6 o'clock p.m., with a funeral mass scheduled for the following day at 10 o'clock a.m., Tuesday, February 20th, 2024, at St. James Catholic Church, 302 North Washington Street, Bront, Texas, 76933. Pallbearers will be Jim Reyes, Miguel Aguirre, Joshua Madrid, Keith Yorkman, Matthew Yorkman, and Miller McConaughey. Honorary pallbearers will be Buddy McGuire, Alex Luna Jr., Sr., and Rooster McConaughey. Lanel's impact on the lives of many will be remembered through the love, laughter, and warmth he shared. Joyce Marie Dameron Hooper, 9-7-1926 to 2-6-2024. Joyce Marie Dameron Hooper went to her heavenly reward on February 6, 2024. Born on September 7, 1926, to pioneer Midland family George Walden, G.W. Dameron, and Anita Viola Whitmire Dameron, she was proud to be a native Midlander. She is survived by her children, Jocelyn Hooper, Peter, deceased, Jesse Donald Hooper Jr., Becky, Carrie Lee Hooper, and Clayton Dameron Hooper. Six grandchildren, Amara Brooke, Dave, Katie Hooper, Jacob Hooper, Lisa, Colin Strickland, Gwen, Evan Strickland, Molly, and Emily McDaniel, along with eight great-grandchildren and one yet to arrive. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Doctors Without Borders, First Methodist Church of Midland, or the charity of your choice. A memorial service for Joyce was held Saturday, February 10, 2024, at 4 o'clock p.m. at First Methodist Church, 300 North Main Street, Midland, Texas. Patricia Ann Ogden, 9-14-1931 to 2-12-2024. Bonham Patricia Tish Ann Bean Ogden, age 92, passed away on Monday, February 12, 2024, at her home. She was born on September 14, 1931, in Motibi, Texas, to Pat and Dorothy Bradstreet Bean, a graveside memorial service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, March 30th, 2024, at Willow Wild Cemetery in Bonham, Texas. She is survived by her daughter, Sheila Gibbs, and husband, Matthew, of Bonham, Texas, grandchildren, Lisanne and Gavin Fernandez, daughter, Teresa Hart, of Odessa, Texas, grandchildren, Donnie Hart, of Odessa, Texas, Kayla McCarty and husband, Jason, great-grandchildren, Taylor and Evan McCarty, daughter-in-law, Roxanne Ogden, of Midland, Texas, grandchildren, Ryan and Lane Ogden, great-grandson, Hudson Ogden, and great-granddaughter, Conley Ogden, in addition to a host of extended family and friends. Patricia is preceded in death by her parents, Pat and Dorothy Bean, brother Roy Bob Bean, former spouse Bill Ogden, son Patrick Ogden, grandson Corby Ogden, and son-in-law Don Hart. To convey condolences or to sign an online registry, please visit www.coopersorrels.com. Melba Ellison, 1/30/1943 to 2/14/2024. Jal. Melba Louise Webb Ellison, 81, of Jal, New Mexico, was born January 30, 1943, in Colorado City, Texas, to Harvey and Louise Palmer Webb, and passed away on February 14, 2024, in Andrews, Texas. Survivors are her husband, Jim, of the home, son, Roy Ellison, and his wife, Teresa, of May, Texas, daughter-in-law, Sean Ellison, of Midland, Texas, four grandchildren, Kylie Ellison of Odessa, Midland, Texas, Justin Ellison and wife Brianna of Greenwood, Texas, Braden Ellison and Beth of Austin, Texas, Shayla Ellison and Colby of Fort Worth, Texas, Jason Perry of Seminole, six great-grandchildren, River, Avery, Raylan, Jaden, Jaylee, and Stetson, and special pet, their dog, Quigley. Melba was preceded in death by her parents, Harvey and Louise Webb, one son, Mac Ellison, a brother, Dale Webb, and her father and mother-in-law, Blackie and Delmer Ellison. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. until 8 p.m. Central on Friday, February 16, 2024, at Family Services Funeral Chapel in Kermit, Texas. Her celebration of life will be on Saturday, February 17, 2024, at Cavalry Baptist Church in Jal, New Mexico, at 2 o'clock p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Interment will be at the Jal Cemetery, South Highway 18, following the memorial. Pall bearers are Braden Ellison, Justin Ellison, Jason Perry, Jim Mason, Harold Swan, and Johnny Lalonde. Honorary pallbearers are Mike Webb, Colby Carruth, Mike Orr, Roxy Swain, Carolyn Swan, and Rick Miller. Donations may be made to the Marine Corps Scholarship Fund or Dogs Charity of your choice. Services will be under the direction of Family Services Funeral Parlor of Kermit, Texas. Cecil Joe Sain. Cecil Joe Sain, 87, of Midland, passed away February 14, 2024. The family will receive guests at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, February 21, 2024, at the branch at NPW. Funeral service will follow at 12 o'clock p.m. Wednesday, February 21, 2024, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Mary Margaret Gaines, 6/28/1924 to 2/13/2024. Mary Margaret Clark Gaines, 99, passed peacefully into the arms of our Heavenly Father on Tuesday, February 13, 2024. Margaret was born in Houston, Texas on June 28, 1924, to Nita Stanislav and Erwin Johns Clark. Margaret was preceded in her death by her parents and her stepfather, Dr. James M. Potts, her brother Erwin Clark, and her grandson Timothy Clark Gaines, son of David and Constance Gaines. She will be missed by all that knew her and her loving children, Jimmy Foster Gaines of Midland, Rosemary Gaines of Midland, and children Jason Fisher and wife Anne, Robin Campbell and husband Judd, and children Madeline and Saxon Seguin, and Lucia, Sophie, Monty, and Patterson Campbell. James Paul Fisher, David Gaines and wife Constance of Austin, and children Whitney Gaines Bednars and husband Michael, and children Landon and Seth Bednars, and Allison Gaines, Mark Gaines of Midland, and Bruce Gaines and wife Christy of Lubbock, and children Constance Gaines Phelps and husband Brian, and children Connor and Carson Phelps, Brandon Gaines, Matthew Gaines and wife Natalie, and children Hazel, Violet, and Olive Gaines, and Taylor Gaines. She will also be missed by many nieces and nephews. Margaret preceded the death of her sister Nita Bainwitz of Dallas, who died the day after Margaret at the age of 98 years. Services will be held at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland, Texas, Friday, February 23rd at 1 o'clock p.m. A reception will be held immediately after the service in the church parlor. Memories and stories of Margaret, as well as condolences, can be posted and shared at www.obits@npwelch.com. Raul C. Pena, Jr., 1-2-1942-2-13-2024. Raul C. Pena, Jr., 82, loving husband, father, grandfather, and friend, entered heaven to meet his Savior on February 13, 2024. Raul was born to Raul and Maria Pena in Alice, Texas, on January 2, 1942. He is preceded in death by his parents, Raul and Maria Pena, wife Eva Pena, sons Rodney Pena and Ruben Pena, sister Marta Tafoya, brother Tacho Pena. He is survived by his brothers, Severano Chano Pena, Nancy, and Fernando Pena, Mary of Midland, and Ramiro Pena, Maria Elena of Alice, Texas, sister Tina Suarez Fernando of Midland. Raul is survived by his sons, Victor Pena, Raul Pena III, Joanne, and Robin Pena, Maricela, daughter Velma Yabara, Jesse, all of Midland, along with 9 grandchildren and 12 great-grandchildren. A viewing will be held at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home in Midland, Texas, February 19, 2024, at 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and February 20, 2024, at 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Funeral will be held at 2 p.m. with a service at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Chapel. Burial will follow immediately at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Pall bearers will be Robin Pena, Ruben Pena, Justin Sacido, Jordan Pena, Jeremy Morgan, Mario Aguirre Jr., Joe Rodriguez, Roy Rodriguez. Midway Energy Building Exploration Production Company. A new exploration and production company is headed to Midland, and its founders all have roots in the Permian Basin. Quote, I and my partners have worked in the Permian Basin, and we feel we have the right combination of experience, end quote. Jack Walter, who serves as Chief Executive Officer of Midway Energy Partners, said. Walter is joined by Brady Adams, Chief Operating Officer, and Jordan Cox, Senior Vice President, Engineering, in establishing the company. Midway recently closed on an equity commitment from investment funds managed by Post Oak Energy Capital. Speaking with the Reporter Telegram by telephone, Walter acknowledged there are challenges in finding assets to acquire and develop in the Permian Basin today. That is why Midway is turning its attention to overlooked or underutilized assets as it gets up and running. Quote, we are actively looking all over the Permian Basin, end quote, he said. The company favors horizontal assets but looks at all possibilities, he said. Quote, our goal is to build an operating company, end quote, Walter stated. Quote, we plan to earn our returns through the drill bit, so we plan to get a rig up quickly, end quote. He and his team are aware of the challenges in the Permian Basin and find it a unique time to be in both the oil and gas industry and in the Permian Basin. Quote, oil and gas people are the best group of people. They're hardworking, entrepreneurial people, end quote, Walter said. Quote, we're also excited about attracting young people. The industry is not as cool and shiny as it was, but if you look over the past 20 years, there's been a ton of innovation. Everything has changed, and I see incredible innovation coming in the future, end quote. Seismicity wells add to water reuse challenges. Forecasts have Texas facing a severe water shortage as the state's water supply could fall 18% while demand rises 9% by 2070. At the same time, experts are forecasting there will be a surplus of twice that amount in water associated with oil and natural gas production. quote, there is a trajectory where we're looking at the high, high end of what communities will have to pay for water, matching the high, high end of what companies pay for water disposal, end quote, said Laura Capper, president and chief executive officer of Energy Makers Advisory Group. Capper, who spoke on panels discussing seismicity as well as a panel discussing best practices in disposal wellbores, told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview, the solution is to find additional ways of using that produced water beyond oil and gas operations. Agriculture, for instance, or aquifer recharge, or ultimately for municipal use. The technology exists, she said, but the challenge is getting the costs where they need to be. Regulators must also scramble to keep up with the rapid pace of innovation in water treatment, she added. There seems to be more of an appetite in Texas for promoting produced water reuse and recycling, and the state has become more aggressive in pushing forward with those efforts, she said. The Railroad Commission has been challenged to address increased seismicity linked with water injection, but Capper said experts are getting better at seeing fault patterns and correlating seismic events so they can devise better policies. She added that there could be other factors besides water injection volumes, rates, or pressures that could induce earthquakes. Quote, you can't make one rule for the Permian Basin and apply it even-handedly. There are differences in geology, minerals, pressures, end quote, she said. There's also the issue of uncontrolled water wells, as seen in Crane County recently. Capper said, quote, it's not today's wells that are the problem. They are very solidly constructed to last for decades or a century. But those high volumes and pressures are operating in the same vicinity as old infrastructure from the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, or even 1960s. This new dynamic and weakened old infrastructure are heightening concerns, end quote. Extracting minerals from water, advancing an oil industry. Oil and natural gas producers who see millions of barrels of water produced alongside their oil and gas are increasingly wanting to do more than merely pump that water back underground or treat it and use it in subsequent operations. Companies are conducting pilot projects testing technology to extract critical minerals like lithium from the water. Quote, it starts with economics, end quote, said Kyle Murray, principal scientist with Murray Geo Consulting. Speaking with the Reporter Telegram after participating in a panel discussion at the Produced Water Society's recent conference in Houston, Murray said most oil and gas producers are seeking to do something economically efficient and viable with that produced water. Extracting critical minerals, quote, is a way to offset the cost of treatment and generate additional revenue, end quote, he said. Quote, the water is already at the surface, so why not extract minerals and add value, end quote. The effort has both economic and environmental benefits. Murray pointed out that the U.S. imports anywhere from 75% to 100% of critical elements like lithium. Quote, so finding a domestic source is essential to ensure the security of needed resources as demand increases, end quote. The new technologies also promise to be more environmentally friendly than the strip mining and use of water sources employed in the countries currently providing those minerals. Extraction technology is readily available, Murray said, but the economics need to be better understood. Two, supplies must be matched with end users and transportation logistics need to be understood and refined. His main business line is characterization of produced water, and he has worked extensively sampling and analyzing Permian Basin produced water, identifying lithium and 60 other constituents. He also works throughout the mid-continent. As more data on the economics of extracting those minerals is gathered, he expects more companies will join the effort. Two, he said, quote, extraction is part of the process towards use of produced water outside the oil industry. Not only is it a source of critical minerals, it can augment fresh water, end quote. Produced water management, key to decarbonization. Nations around the world are moving towards decarbonization of energy. But that goal won't be met without contributions from the oil and gas industry and the water produced alongside crude and natural gas, especially in the Permian Basin. Quote, produced water is going to play a big role in future plans for decarbonization and emissions reduction, end quote, said Rob Brandt, director of product with B3 Insights. Quote, one of the ways is if you inject carbon dioxide and store it underground, end quote, he told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview after he participated in a panel discussion on the subject at the Produced Water Society's conference in Houston recently. That means two things, he said. Water will have to be pulled from underground to make room for that CO2, and ways must be found to manage water produced not from oil and gas, but from CO2 injection. Second, he said, the experience and expertise gained around produced water management and disposal will be, quote, extraordinarily, end quote, important. Quote, the issues facing the Permian Basin with water injection and disposal will be the same around CO2 injection and storage, end quote, Brandt said. Those operating CO2 injection sites will also have to pay attention to induced seismicity and pressure changes associating with that injection. Quote, in order to rapidly accelerate CO2 injection and storage without environmental harm, end quote, lessons learned in managing produced water must be relied upon, he said. Producing low-carbon fuels certified as being produced with zero emissions will be, quote, another arrow in our quiver, end quote, he said. There is also talk about transitioning to hydrogen energy, and Brandt pointed out that generating hydrogen requires large volumes of water. Again, produced water from oil and natural gas operations could provide that water, he said. The technical expertise associated with producing oil and gas and water will be, quote, fundamental to providing reliable, secure energy while transitioning to low carbon or net zero carbon energy, end quote, he concluded. FERC extends Tellurian's construction deadline for massive driftwood project. Tellurian said Friday that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission extended a construction deadline tied to the Houston Liquefied Natural Gas Company's Driftwood project in Louisiana, smoothing the path forward as the company continues to hunt for equity partners for the project. FERC extended Driftwood's construction deadline by 3 years, giving it until April 2029 to complete construction at the site near Lake Charles. The company's stock jumped nearly 10% to 90 cents in Friday trading following the news. The extension, quote, gives them a longer lease on life, end quote, Ben Nolan, an energy analyst with Stifel, said. Quote, for Tellurian, there is no question this is helpful. Without it, there was no hope, end quote. The move, while good for Tellurian, also highlights a key difference between FERC and the Department of Energy, which has declined to approve deadline extensions for the long-term LNG projects, forcing them to reapply for export permits needed for the facilities to ship their product. The Biden administration also made the controversial decision to pause its permitting process last month. Tellurian has made only nominal progress on construction, meaning it will likely need the DOE to approve an extension of the 2026 launch date tied to the company's export permit, said Clark Williams Derry, energy finance analyst with the Institute of Energy Economics and Financial Analysis. Quote, there are a lot of regulatory steps that Driftwood still has to go through, end quote, he said. Tellurian is revamping its strategy after a series of financial challenges that preceded its termination of Sharif Souki, its co-founder and former chairman. The company has struggled over the past year to woo customers and equity partners for its marquee Driftwood LNG project, and in November warned investors about conditions that, quote, raise substantial doubt, end quote, about its cash flow in the months ahead. Tellurian said earlier this month it was considering a sale of its gas production assets in East Texas and Louisiana, which were originally intended to support the Driftwood project. The company confirmed last month that it hired financial firm Lazard, Inc., as it explores new opportunities. Tellurian CEO Octavio Simoes said Friday in a statement that the company remains, quote, eager, end quote, to launch the Driftwood project. Quote, we have invested over $1 billion into Driftwood LNG's development. We have our approval to export and all applicable construction permits, and we are eager to provide the world with liquefied natural gas exports, end quote, he said. Verde Diamondback to build natural gas-to-gasoline facility. A year after signing an equity participation right agreement, Verde Clean Fuels and Diamondback Energy subsidiary Cottonmouth Ventures are developing a natural gas-to-gasoline facility in Martin County. Verde had received a $20 million equity investment from Diamondback to develop and spread its proprietary syngas to gasoline STG+, technology, and that technology will soon spread to the Permian Basin. The two companies have announced a joint development agreement to develop, build, and operate the facility. Quote, it will be located at a Diamondback location in Martin County and produce gasoline from Diamondback Natural Gas, end quote. Ernie Miller, co-founder and chief executive officer of Verde, told the Reporter-Telegram in a telephone interview. The expectation for the project is to produce approximately 3,000 barrels per day. A fully refined gasoline utilizing Verde's patented STG Plus process. By consuming natural gas in the pipeline-constrained Permian Basin as feedstock, the proposed project could demonstrate the ability to mitigate the flaring of up to 34 million cubic feet of natural gas per day, while also producing a high-value salable product. Diamondback will then market the commodity-grade gasoline, he said. The target market for that gasoline is expected to be Permian Basin refiners who would take it as blend stock or gasoline blenders or fuel distributors, he added. While Verde has a similar project underway in California, Miller said the Martin County project will be the first to enter operation when it is complete by late 2025 or early 2026. Miller said the project will not only help mitigate flaring, but also provide economic opportunity by alleviating midstream constraints. At the natural gas trading hub at Waha in Reeves County, he noted the economics of providing the gas to convert into gasoline are more attractive than selling it. He predicted the world would continue to demand gasoline. Verde has estimated replacing conventional gasoline with Verde's renewable gasoline would be comparable to removing 6 of every 10 cars on the road today. Quote, consumers aren't buying electric vehicles. The demand is not there, end quote, he said. Quote, they want hybrids or gasoline-fueled cars. Gasoline has a long runway. People want gasoline, but they want cleaner gasoline, end quote. Referring to the announcement, Diamondback will acquire Endeavor Energy Resources, he added, quote, we know we have a lot of additional opportunities with Diamondback, especially now. We look for the Martin County facility to be the first of many, end quote. Local company provides pediatric speech therapy. Tall City Speech awarded $100,000 by Midland Development Corporation. Tall City Speech, LLC, is committed to making every child's voice heard. The locally owned pediatric speech therapy company, owned by Lauren Zott, provides a holistic approach, speech, swallowing, feeding, breathing, airways, to speech therapy. Zott graduated from Texas Tech Health Sciences Center in 2015 with a master's degree in speech-language pathology. From there, she worked in a variety of clinical settings, whether it was hospitals, schools, or outpatient clinics, working with patients of all ages. She's been a speech therapist for 10 years and has owned Tall City Speech since 2017. She became focused on a specific area of speech therapy called myofunctional therapy due to her own children's sleeping and swallowing issues. Zott took extra courses and trained with mentors to learn about myofunctional therapy. Quote, I'm super passionate about it because I've lived through it, end quote, she said. Quote, I can relate to parents on that level as well. When their child is not eating well or sleeping well, we try to help them get to the root cause of that, end quote. Tall City Speech, located at 5109 West Wadley Avenue, suite number 106, treats tongue thrust, oral resting postures, and tethered oral tissues as a part of its myofunctional treatment plan. It also lists speech articulation and phonological disorders as treatment areas. In addition, they address expressive, receptive, as well as social and pragmatic language. Tall City Speech also treats developmental delays and learning disorders. They treat patients ages 0 to 18. The speech therapy clinic is locally owned and private company. Zott discussed some of the advantages for residents. Quote, we do not take insurance, so we are private pay on top of that. We're private, therefore we don't have to jump through Medicaid and Medicare hoops, insurance hoops, so we can treat children without them having necessarily a prerequisite. In the schools, you have to meet certain criteria for insurance to pay for services. So, us being a private pay, we can treat anyone that needs the help, end quote, she said. In addition, a locally owned business provides a familial feeling between provider and client, according to Zott. She said they value relationships with families on a personal level. with parents attending treatment sessions so they know how to continue treatment at home. Quote, when we are treating a child, we do get down to those root cause issues so we can collapse therapy time, so they are not in therapy very long compared to, say, your traditional speech therapy, end quote, she said. On Tuesday, Zot and Tall City Speech were awarded $100,000 as part of the Midland Development Corporation's Entrepreneurial Challenge. Tall City Speech was one of five finalists out of around 50 businesses, according to Zot, who won the challenge and earned a share of $500,000 that they can put towards growth. Zot said the experience was eye-opening, and she was grateful for the opportunity. She said the challenge, which spanned 6 months, included bi-monthly meetings at the UTPB Small Business Center to take courses on marketing, business structure, pitch writing, and how to write a business plan. Quote, it really makes you dissect your business so that you know every single in and out, every single number, which was very new to me, so it's really eye-opening, end quote, Zot said. Zot added that the challenge included three cutoff rounds where the competing businesses submit a pitch sheet followed by a cutoff round, a business plan followed by a cutoff round, and then a presentation in front of five judges that determine the five finalists. Zot said the $100,000 share for her business will be highly beneficial. She has already hired one new speech therapist with two more she would like to add, an occupational therapist to bring in more diverse therapy. She wants to hire administration positions as well as build a sensory gym for children with those needs. She plans to use some of the funds to do renovation to her building itself, which she wants to continue to make more kid-friendly and inviting for parents and families. With the funds from the Business Challenge, Zot can also provide continuing education courses for her therapists.
Amid high rents, eviction filings in major Texas cities soar above pre-pandemic levels. By guest contributor, February 16, 2024, by Joshua Fetcher, the Texas Tribune. As more renters struggle to afford housing, Texas landlords are filing more evictions than they did before the COVID-19 pandemic, and tenants have few, if any, protections to keep them housed. Landlords filed more than 177,000 eviction cases in the Houston, Dallas, Austin, and Fort Worth areas in 2023, according to records tracked by Eviction Lab, a research center based at Princeton University that tracks eviction filings. The figure represents a slight uptick from 2022, the first null year after the U.S. Supreme Court struck down the federal government's nationwide eviction moratorium. In Houston and Fort Worth, eviction filings have consistently exceeded pre-pandemic levels for nearly 2 years. Cities in Texas used to be some of the more affordable ones in the country, said Adam Chapnick, a research specialist at Eviction Lab. It's not like that anymore. A lot of renters are facing this new reality, and the laws don't exist to protect them. Some $1.8 billion in federal rent relief flowed to Texas over the course of the pandemic, helping more than 265,000 families keep a roof over their heads. Now that money has all but ran out. Texas shuttered its statewide rent relief program last summer, along with sister programs aimed at diverting tenants from eviction. Most local governments, too, have closed their rental assistance programs for lack of federal funds. That has left vulnerable renters in a pinch at a time when they're under more pressure than ever from the state's high housing cost. As the Texas economy boomed in the pandemic era and demand for housing skyrocketed, rents in the state's major urban areas increased by double digits. Evictions in Texas's major cities are back up. Because of state and federal moratoriums in 2020 and 2021, the number of evictions filed by landlords in Texas's major cities dramatically slowed. Now, in some places, those numbers exceed pre-pandemic levels. A record 2.1 million renters, more than half of the state's renters' household, are cost-burdened. A recent Harvard University report found, meaning they spend more than 30% of their income on rent and utilities, leaving them with fewer dollars to spend on household costs like food, healthcare, and transportation. Those most affected by Texas's rising rents are low-income earners who face a dire shortage of affordable housing and have seen their options for cheap rental housing further diminished amidst the state's economic boom. Renters are no better off in the state of Texas than they were before the pandemic, said Ben Martin, research director for Texas Housers, a research and advocacy group. In a state with some of the country's weakest protections for renters, lawmakers last year didn't extend relief to tenants. Texas legislators left renters out of a $12.7 billion property tax cut package that include $5.6 billion in direct relief for homeowners through, though proponents of the legislation have argued the tax cuts landlords will see on their rental properties will trickle down to tenants. Lawmakers also barred cities from enacting additional tenant protections, a move aimed squarely at rules in Austin and Dallas that gave tenants more time to make good on their rent before their landlords filed a formal eviction against them. Those safeguards ended when the new state law took effect September 1st. Lawmakers who pushed for the legislation and landlord groups argued that allowed cities to write their own eviction laws created inconsistent judicial standards across the state. Chris Newton, Texas Apartment Association Executive Vice President, said the law was desperately needed to provide uniformity across the rental industry, as companies dealt with a patchwork of regulations across jurisdictions, resulting in increased cost of operations that impact property owners. Housing experts and tenant advocates in the Dallas area hypothesize the now-gone local tenant protection could be why landlords in Dallas County filed some 5,000 fewer evictions last year than they did the previous year. Lawmakers didn't learn anything. Mark Milton, an attorney who leads the Dallas Eviction Advocacy Center, they killed the protections that were there. There's at least one bright spot for tenants. Before the pandemic, it was rare for tenants facing eviction to have a lawyer represent them in court. That's still true, but it's more common now to find legal aid lawyers offering free legal representation at Justice of the Peace courts, which hear eviction cases. Merely having a lawyer can significantly boost tenants' chances of keeping a roof over their heads, even if it's just for a little longer, research shows. In a survey of nearly 1,300 eviction cases in Dallas County from November 2022 to April 2023, observers working for the Dallas nonprofit Child Poverty Action Lab found that judges ruled in favor of landlords 69% of the time when tenants didn't have legal representation. When they did, landlords won only 7% of the time. When tenants have legal representation, their outcomes tend to be a lot more favorable, said Brianna Harris, Child Poverty Action Lab's Director of Housing Initiatives. Some judges are taking additional steps to make sure tenants have a lawyer at their side when their case is heard. Judge Steve Dubel, a Harris County Justice of the Peace, used part of a $2 million grant from the National Center for State Courts Eviction Diversion Initiative to hire a full-time employee to connect tenants when they arrive for their hearing with legal aid groups to see if they qualify for free legal representation. Dubel said he hopes to eventually put tenants in touch with legal aid as soon as they receive their notice of eviction. If we have someone that is coming through and we identify that this person is really at risk and could be on the street, it's just going an extra mile in trying to help people, Dubel said. Harris County Commissioners in December allocated $4 million in federal pandemic relief funds to expand legal aid services across the country's 16 Justice of the Peace courts, on top of a similar $4 million investment in March. But legal aid groups say there simply aren't enough lawyers to keep up with the sheer volume of eviction filings. Of the 81,510 eviction cases filed in Harris County last year, only 2.1% of tenants had legal representation, according to January advisors. Paul Furr, chief executive officer of Houston-based Lone Star Legal Aid, said his organization turns away roughly 2 out of every 3 prospective clients facing eviction simply because they don't have enough lawyers or enough funds to hire more. Our biggest problem is that we need more boots on the ground, Burr said. There are some moves afoot to try to address the shortage of legal aid lawyers. The state's Access to Justice Commission in December approved a recommendation to allow legal paraprofessionals to provide legal advice and counsel to tenants facing eviction, as well to low-income people facing other legal problems, even though they don't have a law license. The justice gap for poorer people is so big, and we've been working on it so hard for so long, said Texas Supreme Court Chief Justice Nathan Hecht, a longtime advocate for legal aid for low-income Texans. We've got to keep trying. We've got to close it as much as we can. Disclosure. Texas Apartment Association has been a financial supporter of the Texas Tribune, a nonprofit, nonpartisan news organization that is funded in part by donations from members, foundations, and corporate sponsors. Financial supporters play no role in the Tribune's journalism. This article originally appeared in the Texas Tribune at https://www.texastribune.org/2024/02/16/texas-evictions-renters-housing-affordability/. The Texas Tribune is a member-supported, nonpartisan newsroom informing and engaging Texas on state politics and policy. Learn more at texastribune.org. This is Christy, and I'll be reading Odessa American for Friday, February 16th, 2024, by Odessa American. Don't mess with Texas Scholarship Contest, now open for applications. Austin. Texas students who helped clean up and beautify their communities can now apply for a scholarship contest awarding a total of $10,000. The annual Don't Mess with Texas Scholarship Contest is now accepting applications for the 2024 school year. All Texas high school seniors currently attending public, private, or homeschool and planning to attend an accredited college, university, or trade school in the fall of 2024 semester are eligible to apply. Judges will select two winners based on applicants' proven results in leading projects or efforts focused on educating communities about the importance of keeping our state and roadways clean and litter-free. Sponsored by Ozarka and iHeartMedia, the contest recognizes the creativity of high school seniors who are taking a leadership role in preventing litter in their communities. It's important that future generations feel empowered to create long-term, sustainable solutions to make their communities litter-free. Our state is counting on these leaders to keep Texas litter-free for decades to come, Norma Rios, program coordinator for TxDOT's Don't Mess with Texas campaign, said in a news release. Past winners include 2023 winner Hayden with Pioneer Technology and Arts Academy in Greenville. Hayden developed the Trashy Tuesday campaign. At least twice a month, students would gather after school on a Tuesday and clean litter around their campus. The project expanded to cleaning community parks as well. NADA, the Brownsville Early College High School in Brownsville, was another 2023 scholarship recipient. Neda was a leader in the environmental club at her school. They conducted a litter survey and then developed and implemented a litter management plan at her campus. They also created an on-campus recycling program and created a competition among the classrooms to see who can recycle the most. Don't Mess with Texas has been educating Texans about litter prevention since 1986. The program includes annual trash-off community outreach events and the Adopt-a-Highway volunteer program. To apply for the Don't Mess with Texas Scholarship Contest, visit don'tmesswithtexas.org. Applications must be received via online submission by 5 p.m. on April 2nd.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.